and the world. Hotel Mars, episode N, with David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. And we're on our way to Enceladus, one of the moons of Saturn. And the study by Cassini, the spacecraft, some years past, now introduces the concept of a mega plume from Enceladus. And what that means is extremely promising. We welcome someone to help us interpret these events. David Grinspoon is an astrobiologist and a senior scientist at the Planetary Science Institute. Most recently, he's the author or the co-author of a book about Pluto. But right now, we're headed back inside the outer planets to Saturn and Enceladus because Cassini gives us an image of not just a cryovolcano venting from the surface, the cracked ice surface. It looks like Central Park's ice rink used to look like in the old days after people had been skating all day, but also what comes out of that cracked ice and what we learn and can learn from it about water, about the conditions of astrobiology in our solar system. David, Dr. Grinspoon, a very good evening to you. Much of this information you have read over the years. What is new to you about this mega plume? What are you looking for, David? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John and David. Nice to talk with both of you. Well, what's exciting about this is that we're still wringing really important information out of the Cassini mission years after the demise of that spacecraft. And in this case, it's from sampling of the ring particles. There's a diffuse outer ring of Saturn called the E ring, which we now understand is fed by this geyser shooting off of the south pole of Enceladus. So Enceladus is a very intriguing moon of Saturn. It's a small icy moon that we learned with Cassini has this hot spot at its south pole, where indeed it is venting material from its interior ocean out into space. And some of that material goes into orbit around Saturn and forms this ring, which is convenient because Cassini passed through that ring. And now there's been some reanalysis of data that was taken when some of the particles forming that diffuse ring of Saturn impacted an instrument on Cassini called the Cosmic Dust Analyzer, which is supposed to analyze small particles just like it sounds. And they found that they could look at the chemical composition of those ring particles and infer some surprising information about what's in that ocean of Enceladus. It's pretty amazing if you think about it. We're sampling the interior ocean of an icy moon by flying through a ring of Saturn. And what they found that's so intriguing here is the element phosphorus, in particular phosphate, which is phosphorus bonded to oxygens, which is something we understand to be an essential ingredient for life and something that previously had not been detected in that ocean of Enceladus.
David, you have a question for Dr. Grinspoon.
Is Enceladus the only contributor of particles to the E-ring, or does it have particles from another Saturn moon or something else in it?
As far as we know, it's really pretty much just sourced from Enceladus. You know, it's one of these rings. It's very diffuse, and the stuff probably wouldn't be there. The ring wouldn't last very long if it didn't have an active source. And there isn't really any other source that we know of in the Saturn system. And the amount of material coming out of Enceladus seems sufficient to be recharging that ring. So we're pretty confident that when we sample the stuff in that E-ring, we're actually sampling stuff that got squirted out of the ocean of Enceladus.
David, I want to know the source of this, what we think is underneath the ice. We've talked before about the conditions for something that is called life. That would be liquid water, an energy source, that would be heat or gravity, and something to eat on, that would be rock. Now, it doesn't necessarily include all those elements in Enceladus, but we're told underneath that ice is an ocean. Is that confirmed by this megaplume coming from cryovolcanoes?
Yeah, I mean, It's confirmed in the sense that you have this hot spot and you have liquid water squirting out of it. So how could that be unless there was a body of liquid water under the ice? And then the question is, how extensive is that? But that's where modeling comes in and further, subtle analysis of what Cassini has seen. And the best interpretation is indeed that the source of that water squirting out of the South Pole, that geyser, is an underground ocean. And the thing about the chemistry is that, you know, on Earth, we talk about the essential biogenic elements, the elements that are essential for life. And they are carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. We nickname that chomps. Chomps. Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, sulfur, nitrogen, or nitrogen, sulfur. And all of the other ones, except for phosphorus, had previously been identified, at least tentatively, in material coming out of Enceladus. So phosphorus was the missing element. And there was some idea that maybe phosphorus was rare there and might be an impediment because phosphorus plays essential roles, at least on life as we know it. But now it turns out that this observation appears to imply that phosphorus is not only present, but vastly abundant, that there's a lot of it.
David, you have a question.
When you say ocean, David, are we talking about a saltwater ocean like here on Earth or freshwater or what kind of water or is it water?
It's water and it's salty, meaning that it seems to have a lot of ions, a lot of stuff dissolved in it. And actually of importance to this discovery, it's alkaline. In other words, it's not an acidic body of water. It's an alkaline body of water with high pH, not low pH. And that turns out to probably be important in the ability of that ocean to dissolve phosphorus.
And when we look at Enceladus now with the data from Cassini, is there another instrument we can bring to bear on this obvious place to start looking for more clues? That would be the South Pole. Do we have a probe plan?
Cassini is done, and I'm sure people are still looking at whatever they can wring out of that data. And the fact that this report came out now suggests, you know, obviously that job was not complete. Maybe there's more. But the real thing that you would like to do, as you imply, John, is send a new probe there that is specifically, I mean, Cassini was not specifically designed to study Enceladus. Before Cassini, we didn't really have an idea that Enceladus was particularly interesting as except for another icy moon of Saturn. Now, people would love to send a mission dedicated to studying Enceladus. There's nothing funded to do that, but there are a lot of proposals and plans, and a discovery like this will just add an impetus to those arguing that that should be a next high priority mission. And certainly those of us interested in astrobiology would love to see an Enceladus, a dedicated Enceladus mission that really is designed to study whatever is coming out of the interior of Enceladus in those geysers.
Dr. Livingston, you have a question.
David, given all this excitement, how do you assess realistically the likelihood of nuclear propulsion for a Saturn mission? So we get there in what, three times the speed of a chemical rocket, which would be what, 3 or 4 years instead of 12 years or something like that?
Yeah. It's a enticing idea because as you point out, part of the problem with missions to the outer solar system is that it takes a long time to get out there. New Horizons took 9 years to get to Pluto. And depending on the route you take and how much energy you have and how many gravity assists you need, it can take many, many years to get out to Saturn. And so something like nuclear propulsion would be great if we could get there quicker. It's hard for me to assess. I don't think NASA has any immediate plans, but nor as far as I know, do ESA or any of the international space agencies to deploy that. But it's something that has certainly been discussed. And, we have some at least preliminary ideas of how to do it. It's not magical technology. It's just something that needs to be developed. And I think You make a good point that the more excitement there is about this kind of exploration, the more impetus there is to develop what would be sort of game-changing technology for the outer solar system.
We're speaking with Dr. David Grinspoon of the Planetary Science Institute. He's the author, most recently co-author of Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto, which he referenced. We're going to head to the inner solar system because David, in his youth, was a man who introduced me to Venus. There's new information that I'm looking forward to hearing David's thoughts. Volcanoes. David Livingston and Dr. Space himself and David Grinspoon of the Planetary Science Institute. This is Hotel Mars Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.